Hello, my name's Ben Wheatley, the director of Free Fire, and I'm on Film Wax Radio. Thanks for listening, motherfuckers.
They are, too. Hey everybody, this is Adam Shartoff, your host of Film Wax Radio, and you're listening to episode number 480 of the podcast. I hope everybody's well. I have recently gotten back from the Montclair Film Festival. You know, it's a relatively small film festival, you know, just a number of miles from New York City and New Jersey, but it is a mecca for people in the film industry, TV industry, media world. And so it just attracts a lot of great films. It attracts a lot of great industry types. So there's a lot of interesting events that take place during the course of this particular film festival. And I've been now going, I think this was my, I don't even know, third or fourth time going to that festival. And this particular time, I think I spent the most time to date. So I had a great time, and I got to see a bunch of films, and I got to really spend some significant time with people there. And we have a few segments coming up in the next couple of episodes with filmmakers that were at Montclair showing their films, including, for instance, Kimberly Reed, who's been a documentary filmmaker. She made a film some years ago called Prodigal Sons, and she has a new film called Dark River. And she'll be talking about that. And then we also have another filmmaker named Ben Niles, who I was just introduced to. He has a documentary about the sibling act, The Five Browns. And this is a fascinating documentary. And he will be on as well coming up. Now, I'm going to kind of rush through the intro a little bit, only to the degree that I need to head down to Baltimore momentarily, where I'm going to be now going to the Maryland Film Festival just for a couple of days. Today, it's Thursday, May 3rd. I want to also mention my thank yous to the Quad Cinema. I was there last night. They're having an Alan Rudolph retrospective, and I was there last night. I watched Choose Me and Trouble in Mind, two really just very memorable, bizarre films, highly entertaining stuff. Alan Rudolph was there. Keith Carradine was there. It was a fun night. And so thank you to the Quad Cinema. The retrospective continues. Check out the Quad Cinema website if you're local to New York and try to get down there and see some of these really singular films. Speaking of singular, we have on Kim Jackson on this episode coming up. She is the entertainment president at this blockchain studio called Singular DTV. You're going to be hearing a lot more about Singular DTV. Anyway, Kim is a fan of the show, it turns out, and I was very excited to invite her onto the podcast, and we had a great time. We recorded this down in Austin back in March, a couple months ago, when we were both at South by Southwest. Kim and her colleagues at Singular DTV were down there representing their company, and they hosted a couple of social events, and Kim did, a panel. So I was down there, and we knocked out this conversation you're about to hear. And then you're going to hear my pal Max Heller, who is the first-time feature director. He has a film called Born Guilty. It stars Rosanna Arquette, and it opens on Friday, May 11th, Mother's Day weekend. And we're going to have Max Heller on just in a couple of minutes. But first, this is Kim Jackson. Again, she is entertainment president at Singular DTV, which is the first, I believe, ever blockchain entertainment studio. You should go check out singulardtv.com for more information. But Singular DTV is a blockchain entertainment studio laying the foundation for a decentralized entertainment industry, guiding the future of rights management, project funding, and peer-to-peer distribution. Singular DTV's platform empowers artists and creators with powerful tools to manage projects from development all the way to distribution Again, check out singulardtv.com. Reach out to these folks if you are interested in more information or pursuing blockchain as the economic foundation of your project. So I want to thank Kim Jackson, who you're about to meet right here on FilmWax Radio. Hi, Kim Jackson.
Hi, Adam.
So we met at I moderated Q&A. Is that what happened at Blue Caprice for the IP their series, right?
Yes, at the IP Center, the new one there.
Right, Medium New York Media Center. Not so new anymore, actually.
No,
it's actually, even though we think of it, because it's relatively new, I suppose, right?
Yeah, in my mind, I don't know why, but yeah.
Let's get out of the way first before we talk about Singular DTV. For a minute, let's find out more about you. I know you produce, and you produce some really amazing films in the past. So how did you end up being a producer, a film producer? Did you always want to be a producer when you grew up?
That's funny. I was just talking to someone earlier today. We sort of reminisced on that topic. My parents would probably argue that I came out of the womb producing.
Mm-hmm.
I remember a boyfriend in Boston one time said, "You're a producer." And I said, "What is that?" I studied environmental science and biochemistry.
Naturally.
At Simmons College in Boston, lived in Cambridge, the People's Republic, as it's commonly known as, and...
Of higher education.
And my commencement speaker was Denise Denovi, who is a prolific producer, Warner Brothers. She actually just directed her first feature film
recently.
Is that right? And so she was my commencement speaker, and I was really inspired by it, and... a few alumni. I always get that wrong.
Alums. I don't know.
Alum of my college. Mm-hmm. Several of them were in the entertainment industry. Agent at William Morris, and of course Denise, and another executive at the time at Disney and Touchstone Television, ABC, was sort of combined. And in any event, when I had worked for the college in the development office, I had connected with these ladies. I went out for a vacation in California, and the next thing I know, I had a job at, you know, Disney Touchstone Television, mm-hmm. Working as an assistant early days. And I got the bug, you know, and certainly didn't want to stay in television, mm-hmm. and then took a job working with screenwriters. I kind of went to film school by the jobs that I did.
You were thrown into...
Well, I'm at the Disney, and they're like, "Here, give us a review, you know, give us script coverage." I didn't even know what that meant. Mm-hmm. So I would take a night class and a weekend class in writing so that I knew how to read a script. I didn't necessarily want to be a writer.
I understand, but that's a thoughtful kind of approach to it. You know, it's a good idea, in other words, to do that.
Well, I thought, I don't write necessarily, but I should probably understand what goes into script writing. And then that company ended up hiring me mm-hmm. to run their New York division. So I worked with screenwriters for a good year in New York, which I thought was a really good place to start, because I really fell in love with filmmaking from the script, you know, creative place.
Yeah, and which leads to development, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it was probably about 16 years ago in New York when that was going on. And I decided to leave, and I got a job at the Hamptons International Film Festival working with Raj and Denise.
Yeah.
And they hired me just, you know, for 3-4 months, because that's what festival work is like.
Right.
And I literally leaped off of the full-time, you know, corporate job structure into freelance land, going, well, I guess I'll just figure it out in 3 months. And I've been freelancing ever since.
Are you good at just sort of not hitting the ground running so much, although that's always part of it, but are you good about getting tossed into the deep end and figuring things out on the fly? You can develop as a freelancer also in a different area, but I've learned you get hired, you know, you got to kind of figure out not only the work itself, but the environment, all these different things, and kind of make it work quick.
Yeah, I think that my upbringing probably prepared me a lot for that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was a young woman in New York City, lived on my own, had my own apartment, and mm-hmm. and I think that I was very motivated mm-hmm. to have a lifestyle in New York City. And of course, it was It's hard not to.
What? Yeah, it's hard not to.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it's like the stress of not knowing when your next job is you know, a similar stress from my friends who had 9-to-5s who were just stressed out all the time by just that structure. Mm-hmm. So it's just the same. There's stress, but it just looks different.
Did you grow up? You didn't grow up in the Massachusetts, though. You just happened
to,
you went
to college. No, I grew up in Illinois.
In Illinois, okay.
Yeah, very good. And then ended up going to college.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
All roads lead to New York, it seems, at least if you're going to be in film or media. It got a foot in both sort of areas right now because, I mean, blockchain technology, what would you call it? Not blockchain.
Yeah, blockchain technology. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, listen, producing independent film for the last, say, you know, 11 years, 11 years, I transitioned into doing that. Great fun, amazing adventures, mm-hmm. some good stuff, some, you know, some fails, some failures, some successes. With independent film, there seems to be no said equation mm-hmm. for that. But I think after being involved in the selling of a few films, you realize why people take day jobs in the industry, because it's really tough. You're starting from scratch every time you do a new film. You can call yourself a production company with a shingle and a you know, label on it, but you're starting from scratch every single time with new investors, and you know the process. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone mm-hmm. listening, you know the process. So,
yeah.
A colleague who you know and I, after the last one, we sat down and we were like, there has to be a better model. There has to be better revenue models for independent film. You know, why do we need these intermediaries? Why do we need sales agents and distributors? I mean, if it's just all about VOD and they're not going to put it in the theater anyway, why don't, you know, I can go to iTunes through Premiere and pay $5,000. And if I just market it myself, then just send everybody through marketing to iTunes or Netflix, then I don't need these guys and gals, right? Arguably. Mm-hmm. And they wait to see how you're going to do at the festivals anyway before they take on your film.
Well, there's a lot of the industry that are invested in the old paradigm that would tell you, say otherwise. So pushing back is a part of what you have to do to say, well, no, there are actually other paradigms. It's just that's the bill of goods
that we're being
sold. You have to have a distribution company, you have to have a sales, you have to have these things. There's a lot of people who are kind of invested in that concept, right?
Well, once you go through and you realize you don't really get much out of it.
Yeah.
You go, well, why do I need that? You know, it's like having a really hot boyfriend who treats you like shit. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, it looks good on the paper, but it's not really in actuality happening. So
it really does return, and it returns, if not all the power, at least a lot of the control is in the hands, again, of the team, of your team, of the film's team.
Right. And then you listen to the conversations that are going on at the markets, mm-hmm. at least in the last 3-4 years, and you start to see the writing on the wall, and then there's doors closing every day of companies that we've all known for years. Mm-hmm. And the power lies in the ability to control and distribute your IP. And if you can do that, mm-hmm. and we're seeing the companies that are successfully doing that, that's where you have to sort of sit. And so you're seeing a lot of sales and distribution companies starting to produce mm-hmm. now, which is interesting, right? Mm-hmm. And develop, and you can sort of own your stuff. And when I learned about blockchain technology, the very first experience that we all are familiar with and the first application is currency. Mm-hmm. So currency, Bitcoin, we're all aware of. That's the first application that came on the scene that lives on something called blockchain. Mm-hmm. So,
and blockchain, you're about to describe it. So I was just going to say it's like as best as I can grasp, it's as though there were a ledger right out there, and it's completely transparent to everybody who is using this currency, correct? So
yes, so computing as we know it today and its 50-year trajectory mm-hmm. has brought us to a very centralized internet system, meaning that where there's data, there's not always network, and where there's network, there's not always data. So information is siloed. So look at the healthcare industry, for example. Mm-hmm. If you go to one doctor one day and a month later you go somewhere else, they can't access the same medical information on you, and they should be able to because mm-hmm. it's on the internet. I mean, but it's not. It's in these silo databases. So what blockchain technology is, it's called decentralized. So where there's network, there's mm-hmm. data, and where there's data, there's network. Mm-hmm. And it is transparent and it is traceable. So if anyone has a computer who logs onto the network, they have access to that information.
So it's a blockchain network.
Is that...
It is a network, and it's also, you know, literally blocks of information, mm-hmm. coding, mm-hmm. Math, you know, at a very core level. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so all types of other applications are, besides currency, are possible, mm-hmm. because intrinsically what blockchain technology allows for is the alleviation of the intermediary mm-hmm. in a transaction of value.
Right.
So if so,
like
banks,
a bank? Okay.
Absolutely. So if you apply that to entertainment industry, for example, mm-hmm. rights, revenue, and royalty management is where we get the pain points in the distribution piece. And all mm-hmm. of these intermediaries come in to take a piece of the pie, then they don't...
It's okay. Some noise is okay. I just wonder, what's that noise? I can hear some.
Is it a coffee maker?
It's okay. Anyway, right? we're you know, it's South by Southwest. We're at a festival.
That's right.
We're not in some nice, you know, sealed off studios. So
yes,
you're going to hear some noises.
It's very phonetic at the festival. Yeah. It's a really
but
good
that's
time.
Part of
it's
the
a good time.
Very similitude that my listeners can appreciate. We're not in, you know, some New York audio recording studio.
Right, right. We're on the scene.
We're actually on East 6th Street, which is like the busiest street in all of Austin, I would probably guess, other than a highway. You know?
Right.
Right? So it's actually relatively quiet here.
In this room. In exactly. About, right now. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
You've overtaken this spot called the Clear...
Clearport.
Clearport.
Are you coming to our party tonight?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't... Wait, I didn't get invited. I don't know if I was invited.
Of course you're invited.
Just tell me...
I'll give you a wristband. Okay. We have a VIP area. Grammatic is performing tonight. Do you know Grammatic?
No, I don't, but...
Oh, man. His music's phenomenal.
I've heard of him.
He's an EDM producer, artist, mm-hmm. and he is on his U.S. tour right now, so he's stopping here to perform for us at 11 till 1, and there's some other... cool guys spinning before that. Uh-huh. But he was the first artist that we tokenized on our application Tokit.
Okay.
So we launched our first application Singular DT did in November. Mm-hmm. It's called Tokit.io. Mm-hmm. It's where you tokenize yourself so that you can program your rights, revenue, and royalty.
Getting back to what you were talking about.
For mm-hmm. whatever creative endeavor you have. So he happens to be a musician. Uh-huh. And when we launched Tokit mm-hmm. in November, he raised 2.25 million in ETH in 24 hours. And so now he's able to like take a break after this tour and actually get back to creating, because a lot of these guys and gals are pressured.
Right.
Well, they're pressured to continue to go on tour to make money.
Yeah. And then they can't create new stuff.
But can't create new stuff.
Yeah. Like every filmmaker, you know.
Exactly.
They have to go around for a year to two.
Exactly.
With their film.
Exactly.
It's a roadshow.
Yes, right? Yes. So, so he was on a panel yesterday with our CEO and a couple of the other artists that we've tokenized as mm-hmm. Sort of case studies. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I gotcha. So you were kind of, I think, still defining terms here.
Oh, maybe was I on blockchain?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, essentially Singular DTV is a studio where it's completely using blockchain technology
yes.
and currency
yes.
to finance your films. So,
well, we do have a division that is doing original content.
Okay.
Singular DTV is a parent company, right?
Yes, I guess.
And underneath of that umbrella, we have a tokenizing application called Tokit.io, right. where you can go and tokenize your film, your music, yourself, your company. We have some nonprofits. Mm-hmm. And what that does is allow you to create smart contract systems so that you can embed your rights into that token mm-hmm. so that wherever it lives on the blockchain, it's always traceable because mm-hmm. it is a transparent system.
Right.
So to marry that, we are building a distribution platform mm-hmm. so that if you're a musician or a filmmaker or a TV producer or author,
right.
podcasts... You
Wait
can,
a minute.
Yes, you oh. can get a channel uh-huh. on EtherVision and directly reach your fan base. And because you've already tokenized it, your rights, revenue, and royalty management are an instantaneous revenue flow is going to happen into your wallets mm-hmm. per transaction. Mm-hmm. So every time someone watches or reads or listens, instantaneously, the revenue split happens and goes into the wallets. And then there'll be an interface for the producers and filmmakers and whomever to be able to see where the mm-hmm. rights and revenue and royalty are.
Like a dashboard type of thing.
Exactly, yeah. A dashboard, exactly. And mm-hmm. so it's sort of a no-brainer in terms of
it's a concept accounting. Which once you grasp, it seems like it's a it opens up a whole world possibility, yeah. right? I mean, this is exciting. Talk about a certain filmmaker.
Yeah, which one?
Well, I was thinking of Lynch, David Lynch.
Okay.
Because when is that news
to be broke? If you want to talk about it, and then we can give you the green light to be able to put it.
Absolutely.
It's pretty
I've got
close.
A number of weeks anyway. Where,
okay.
But I'm always the best. I mean, honestly, this is about advocating for.
Yes, I listen to your show.
Okay.
So I
so
really
you know,
do.
Like I wait for whenever the right moment
yes,
is
Yes, I listen to your
help.
Show. It's great. I really enjoy
Thank
it.
You. Well,
I do, yeah. So.
That part stays in, though.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks.
So this filmmaker is we can break it here in a sense of wait for you to green light me putting this out.
Yeah.
But we can frame it as though you're breaking some news here about your latest client or partner. How do you describe a producer, a filmmaker? In this case, he's producing a film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So interestingly enough, we by building this are attracting. Mm. Filmmakers who are already decentralized and don't even know it, kind of thing. So, for example, I'm just going to use a couple examples of artists who are decentralized and don't even know it.
Well, exciting.
This one's unfortunately, God rest his soul, but Prince was so decentralized,
right?
He didn't
even
know it.
That's a great example. Yeah.
Yes, and
we could say until he was. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, Kim. Please.
I was going to say Louis C.K. is doing that too.
Well, yes, exactly. Yeah. Louis C.K. said I was going to. That was my next one.
Oh,
I mean, even David Bowie in the day. He launched himself on Wall Street.
In that sense, he also they used conventional distribution when and how they felt it would come in handy.
Yeah.
Not as a lock. You know, not as a default only option. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like so, he did come to. He did use sometimes distribution for certain things, obviously to get the. As did Louis C.K. and
I think for artists who already have a substantial fan base, mm-hmm. who are not seeing enough of the money going into their wallet, literally, this technology is going to make a lot of sense because you can. Blockchain is a peer-to-peer value exchange mm-hmm. technology.
Mm-hmm.
Apply that to whatever you got, right?
Understood.
So the internet brought us instantaneous peer-to-peer communication. Mm-hmm. Blockchain is going to bring us instantaneous peer-to-peer value exchange.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these intermediaries and whatever business models you have are not necessary anymore. And it's not about putting them out of business. It's about redefining how they want to be involved in the value exchange. And a lot of times, especially in our industry, you get to be more creative.
Yeah.
I mean, most sales agents and distributors I know, they really want to be making movies and be producers and be directors. And, mm-hmm. you know, we've all, because it's such a tough industry, had to drop into these other roles mm-hmm. in order to survive. But how many people do you meet really have their own script in their back pocket, but they're doing something else? Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I know. If you really hang out with them long enough and get down into it, it's like, I went to school for directing. I have this great story, you know, but I'm doing this other thing because, you know, you got to make a living. And I totally understand. But in any event, I digress a little bit. But blockchain technology is really cool. I mean, it's coming whether we want it or not. And we just happen to have jumped on board at the right moment to develop tools for the entertainment industry. And there's big companies talking to us about white labeling just the rights, revenue, and royalty management. Because mm-hmm. imagine if you have all these libraries and this huge library of film that you have to constantly be paying out residuals and royalties. Sometimes mm-hmm. you're spending a penny. I mean, you're sending out a penny and you're spending $5 just to spend that or just to send that penny.
Right.
So this is going to really help the efficiency and the backroom accounting. And it's going to save companies millions of dollars, mm-hmm. this technology. So. But we have some interesting filmmakers who are sort of gravitating towards us, learning about it. And we have a project that we're very excited about that will be presented by David Lynch. It's being directed by Duane Duran, mm-hmm. who is his longtime collaborator and editor of all the Twin Peaks, even the latest series.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And really talented, amazing mind. And he has a really cool script called The Happy Worker. That's a very interesting left of center sort of utopian story. And we're very, very excited to make this film with them. And we're very excited to work with them. And, you know, I keep saying, like, it's really nice that there's David Lynch's name, you know, attached with it. He's presenting, he's helping with a lot of creative resources, but it's really Dwayne's film. He's the director, and he's really talented and he's really amazing. And the team, Bill Borden, who's a producing, longtime producer. He produced, you know, everything from La Bamba to, you know, High School Musical and everything in between. He's amazing. The team's fantastic. And so, you know, I do want to really stress that this is Dwayne's film.
Got
and
it.
His friend,
sure,
David Lynch,
right,
is going to come along for the ride and help, you know, creatively wherever it makes
sense. Shake the tree. Or yeah. Whatever he's doing.
Yeah. So I think once we're in production and we're in exhibition, we'll see a lot more from, you know, from him in terms of participation. But I am, as a filmmaker, I always like to respect the fact that it's the director's film, and that's Dwayne. But we're excited. You can imagine that the subject matter is, you know, something unusual and
certainly
out there.
Yeah. And were there any others, or were there?
We're doing something with XYZ Film. Mm-hmm. It's a sci-fi anthology, we're calling it.
Okay.
Called New Frontiers, which is very apropos since we're kind of in the new frontier of the technology, entertainment technology.
I would say so.
Very exciting, super amazing script. Came from a company called Ground Control, which has a film here called Prospect.
Oh, I saw it.
You saw it?
Yeah, I saw it.
I want to see it. I got invited to see it tonight.
Yeah, Jay Duplass is in it. And
oh, cool.
I'm trying to remember who plays his daughter. I should know.
Yeah, so the same team.
I apologize to the listener.
Yeah. Apparently the same, you know, creative team of that film brought New Frontiers to XYZ, who then we met. And so we're all collaborating on that, which is exciting. Mm-hmm. And we have a couple of other interesting ones sort of in the mix. And we have a documentary that will be...
Right, oh, Alex's.
Alex Winter is directing. And we are in post on that one. And we should be ready spring, summer to start getting that out to the festivals.
Well, let me know. It's coming up in the next few months. So let me know.
Yes, absolutely.
We can do something else with that. That'd be great.
Have you come to one of the premieres, wherever that might be?
Thank you.
Very excited about it. Saw a rough cut and I was like, woo, all right. We're about giving creative control to the artists.
Right.
We have money. We have studio money. We know how to make movies. I have a very large team of professionals who've been making movies for a long time. But one of our mandates is we're working with, especially filmmakers like, you know, Lynch level, we're not going to micromanage your process. We're not going to get involved like a studio would and tell you how to make your movie. And so we just said to Alex Winter, we want a movie about blockchain. Go have fun. Here's some money. And then he came back. Wow. I had no idea what I was going to
And you're
See,
pleased?
I'm very pleased. Yeah. Okay. It's really well done. It's a tough subject to make a movie about. And he was such a perfect director choice because he's been around this technology space for a few years.
Because there's nothing tactile.
So,
or visual in a way. I mean, I guess that's arguable. But
yeah.
But yeah, I can understand why that is. But a genius filmmaker can figure it out.
Yeah, he's done a really great job. And I think it's like something that won't be outdated once it comes out. Because a lot of these Bitcoin movies that come out by the... us who've been in the space for 4 years, when one of them comes out, we're all like, oh, no, that happened a year ago.
Right,
you know,
that's
so old. It's so not the paradigm anymore. That's no. So that's the danger of some of these Bitcoin movies and crypto movies, because the nature of film takes 12 months or more to get it out and around.
Yeah.
That was one of our goals. That was our only sort of directive. Was like, please don't make it outdated by the time it comes out. Like that's the only goal.
Right.
So he accomplished that and then some.
So there are actually many filmmakers who do listen to this podcast. And so if they're interested in more information or, you know, seeking some solution like this, what should they do? Where should they go?
Sure. Well, look for our name out and around. We're certainly going to be at a lot of festivals coming up, doing moments of education, letting people know what's coming.
I see you're a speaker here at South by Southwest. So what panel were you on?
I'm on a panel tomorrow with Alex Winter and Logan Hill, who you may know, journalist. And we're having a more of a general conversation about decentralization and blockchain.
Okay. Where is that? Not that my audience can go anymore.
No.
But I'm interested.
Yeah. I'm going to need to look at the schedule.
Oh, okay. See, there's a case where we can fix that.
I'm not quite sure.
Don't worry about it. It's okay because it doesn't affect this.
Might be at the... I think it's at the... Actually, It's at the convention center.
Sure it is. It's probably
yeah. Just check the app.
Right.
The singular yeah. The SD the X or the
X Express.
X Express. Yes, one of those. Check yeah. Check the
Express app.
South by app, which is so impressive.
Yeah, it's a good
it's
one.
It's really good app.
It's good. Yeah.
So filmmakers, look for us at the festivals. We'll be at Tribeca. Mm-hmm. We actually have an application called Rentalist, which is a camera equipment rental tokenized blockchain company. Mm-hmm. High-end camera equipment, job listing, crewing.
Prosumer.
Yes. Yeah. And it's kind of Airbnb for camera equipment and also for crewing. And that sort of thing. And we'll be doing something at Tribeca around that.
Okay. Oh, that's coming up. That's a good,
that's coming up.
Good time to put it up. Maybe.
And we'll be in Cannes. We'll be in Toronto. So anytime you see our name, please come on along. You'll learn a lot of really cool things about what's happening in the future. Mm-hmm. We're definitely living in the future, which is exciting. And you can go to our website, www.singularddecentralizedtv.com. And then our first application is in beta right now, mm-hmm. and we're encouraging people to go figure it out. It's kind of for crypto savvy people at the moment. Mm-hmm. Blockchain is in its infancy. It's like dial-up days for the internet, right?
Right, yeah.
So it does take a little bit of technical savvy. You need a wallet. Mm-hmm. You need a crypto wallet. You need to know how to exchange cryptocurrency and mm-hmm. ETH and all that stuff. But Tokit.io is our tokenization application, very exciting, kind of like a Kickstarter, right? Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. on the blockchain. Mm-hmm. So those are a few places, and you know,
we'll continue to tuning in, because we'll I think we follow up here is necessary, since things are moving and progressing so quickly, and you know, it would be nice to kind of keep up on it with you and your team.
Well, I'm a fan of FilmWax. I have been for a long time, so I'm really I'm very honored to be chatting with you today.
Likewise. I'm so glad that Tessa helped motivate us both and got this done.
She's a rock star.
She is.
We love her. Yeah.
Well, thank you. It was great talking to you.
Thank you. You too, Adam.
All right. Born Guilty is the story of a lonely and frazzled New York social worker, played by Rosanna Arquette, who can't resist the urge to intervene in her son Marty's life. Meanwhile, Marty, played by young actor Jay DeVore, is trying to be creative in his advertising career and manage a romantic relationship at the same time, on top of constantly talking his mother off the ledge. When Marty's free-spirited Aussie pal, Rawl, played by David Cousins, shows up, Marty hires Rawl to see Judy and restore her to health any way it takes. Director Max Heller's heartfelt ensemble comedy is filled with wry, sly, funny, and sexy connections reminiscent of Nora Ephron, Neil Simon, Woody Allen, the Farrelly brothers, and Rob Reiner's romantic concoctions. Again, the film stars Rosanna Arquette, Keisha Sharp, David Cousins, Jay DeVore, and let's not forget Xander Berkeley, too. It's got a great cast. It opens May 11th, just in time for Mother's Day. It's opening up in ten cities, but if you're in New York, come over to the AMC Times Square 25 on Friday or Saturday. I believe I'll be helping doing some Q&As, support local filmmaking, especially a wacky screwball comedy, which you don't get to see too often. I met Max when my friend Owner's film, Summer of Blood, was coming out. Max was a producer on the film, and we did a memorable Q&A with Owner at the Tribeca Film Festival, and we've been friends since. This is my conversation with filmmaker friend Max Heller, right here on FilmWax Radio.
Alice, do you like the nurses?
What?
Are the nurses treating you all right? Do you like the nurses?
No, they yell too much.
I know know you're there. I really need to talk to you.
Marty?
It's your mother. Pick up the phone now.
What is wrong with you? It's not printing. It's not working. I'm pressing the button.
On the power strip.
Is it on?
Oh.
All I make is mistakes.
Come on, Mom.
You made me.
And I never see you.
I bet if your mom's life didn't suck so bad, yours wouldn't either.
Whoa! I've returned your buddy and soul.
You got no home, no cash. Pay your sorrow together. Want a 3-month job to earn that cash you need? You go to New York and you show this woman how good a true man can be.
Culture, stories, attention.
Like a healer.
This young man asked me out for a drink.
I thought this was more comedy.
What do you have to lose?
My sanity, for one.
Call back and be insistent.
What do you want me to do? Bang down her door?
You need a lift?
You've come for me?
You remind me of a man I gave my heart to.
You dropped her off when the sun was coming up?
I'm in love.
You're talking about my mom, all right? She collects rubber bands.
Oh, it looks like I thought you went maybe see one of the Pacino retro.
I'd like to.
It's over.
It's over?
It's over.
Yeah, well, but I've got the guidebook.
He worked with some of the great directors, right?
Pacino, of course.
I was thinking it was a way to segue into the death of Milos Forman. I think he was 80. Was he 84 years old?
Yeah. Yeah, he's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
One of the greats.
One of the greats, indeed.
Should I just relax like this?
Yeah, you should relax.
Okay.
It's a little surreal because we have a history as friends, and now you're finally, we're talking on the podcast.
Yes, after we are. Time. Yes, we are. We finally are.
And Roseanne Arquette is here, but she's got a bad case of laryngitis, so she's not going to talk.
No, she isn't. Not today.
Right? Hold on. What's that? Don't strain your voice. I get it. You want to talk, but don't. Just do what the doctor said. Gargle. And just save your voice. And we're here because you have a film. Is this your first feature, Max?
Well, I mean, it's the narrative fifth film that I've produced. It's the first one that I've written and directed and produced, all three.
Uh-huh. And edited.
And edited, of course.
A little insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Quadruple threat.
Yeah. Well, you didn't star in it.
No.
Fortunately, no. As large as and as expansive as your ego is, you showed a little restraint in that regard.
I did have a solo scene, if you remember the jogger.
Yes, I do remember that.
That was
something referring to a game or something, or
yeah, there was the I asked if the Dodgers are playing.
Right, it's a zany. I guess you call it a farce of a comedy.
That's true. Yeah, see, it's got some slapstick. It's got some
broad comic jet moments.
Mm-hmm.
And it was you shot in New York and Los Angeles.
Right. It's kind of a tale of two cities.
What's the name of the movie?
Born Guilty.
Because I remember a movie called Born Innocent.
Yes, that's right. Now it's Born Innocent.
With Broderick Crawford and Judy Holliday.
That's right. That's a classic.
Which is a classic in the screwball comedies?
Screwball comedies, exactly.
So this is in that, you would put this in that genre, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, if you had to put it in a genre... I mean, it could be a screwball comedy. It could be a romantic comedy. I don't know. I just call
edible,
it my
edible comedy.
My life is what I really just call it.
Your life? Well, because it reflects your the boundaries between
what
parents
boundaries?
And their kids. Right.
What boundaries?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I can kind of also relate as a Jewish son of mm-hmm. a Jewish mother.
Yes.
And all that implies.
Yeah, it's true. Although Catholics seem to appreciate this as well.
That's true. There's that exact. Yeah, you're right. I think the Jewish and the Catholic mother. There's a lot of similarities. The Italian mother with the Jewish mother, and even Irish.
Yeah, and apparently there's a phenomenon that's going on in Texas as well because it's screened in Texas for a small audience, and everyone seems to relate. Like that's just like my mama. That's my mama Kath up there on the screen.
Mm-hmm. So they brought up people from. Those sound like more like.
that was my Texas accent.
I see.
So people relate. people relate.
This was in Austin, Texas. Nation. Okay.
No, wasn't Austin. It was.
Oh yeah, I thought it was.
More. No, it was more out in the hinterlands. Hmm. But yeah, but I'm saying it's. this condition of being born guilty seems to relate to a lot of people's experience throughout.
I'm going to start setting it up and you interrupt me.
Okay.
The story.
Okay.
A workaholic young guy.
Yes.
Who works as a creative in an ad agency.
True.
And is trying to have a relationship with this very beautiful young woman.
Correct.
But he's finding it hard to focus on all of the above.
Mm-hmm.
Because he has an over-involved mother who's, even though she lives in New York and he lives in L.A., she just calls it the drop of a hat.
She calls it a drop of a hat. And she calls, because she's in continual crises.
Right.
And he calls upon her son, Marty Weiss.
Played by
Jay DeVore. He's a newcomer. He's a great, young, comedic actor who I discovered.
Oh.
Yeah.
You retain, okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for his career. Yeah, he's worked and there. And he's a young working guy, but I felt like he deserves a fuller role because he killed it in the audition, and I brought him back for several more auditions, and I just love the way he reacted and the way he connected, and he had a really great sense of humor with every word, so that's why I really liked him. Mm-hmm. But back to the story. So he has this mom who's always in need, and he has to like walk her off the ledge of crises, and she gets very emotional, and it's his job to kind of like, you know, calm her down and teach her to breathe, and
Well, she's lonely.
She's lonely.
And living in a hard, cold city.
Yeah, she's living in a very hard, cold, competitive city, and she has not had a decent relationship for about 20-something years.
Mm-hmm.
Around the time, she divorced Marty's dad, and she's had like, you know, little relationships here and there, but nothing's really panned out.
Mm-hmm.
And she just kind of gave up on men after a while. And now she's in her 50s. But she has that kind of emotional relationship in her life, which is with her son. So she kind of feels fulfilled a little bit because she has someone to talk to all the time. She's got that, but she's kind of blocked and stymied and not moving on. And so Marty has to figure out a way to kind of like get his mom to see the world in a different way and open up. And he can't do it himself.
Serendipitously,
mm-hmm.
an old friend knocks on the door one evening.
Yeah.
His old school pal.
Yeah, his old buddy from college shows up that he hasn't seen in 9 years. However, they've been connected through a little thing that I don't call the internet. I call it postcards. So he's been getting postcards from his friend who's been traveling around the world,
right.
Doing yoga.
Sort of a self-identified spiritual Zen,
wanderer.
New age wanderer.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Who's not tied down to...
It's not materialistic.
He's not materialistic. He's given all that up for...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he's just kind of like wandering, you know, he's like a very non-judgmental, he kind of like goes with his feelings, and he's honest, and forgiving, and kind, and he's the person that he respects the most, the kinds of people he respects the most are the healers in our world, because he knows that the world today is very out of whack, and he thinks if somebody can like spend their life trying to heal others, that's the greatest thing. So he's comes to New York. I mean, actually, no, he comes to Los Angeles because Marty lives in Los Angeles. And he comes to see his old friend. And he hangs out with his old friend. Then they catch up. And, you know, him and Marty haven't seen each other, but they've had postcards that he sent. And he has a whole refrigerator filled with his postcards. Anyway, so they still have a connection.
Inside the refrigerator, interestingly.
Inside the
you'd think it'd be on magnets on the outside, but it's not.
Yeah.
Keeps them in the crisper.
Keeps them
inside
the crisper.
The crisper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but essentially, so they hang out for a few days, and then Rawl asks his friend, Marty, if he can lend him some money. And the reason he wants to lend him some money, or the reason he asks is because he wants to take these... little arts and crafts that are made in small communities in East Africa, South America, and he thinks he can really help these families if he can bring their crafts to the world to sell them. So he wants to sort of do a little import-export business, and he wants to borrow $10,000 to do this from Marty. And Marty has some means at this point because he's doing well in the world of advertising. But it kind of annoys Marty, but he thinks about it for a while, and then his mom interrupts him again when he's having a big meeting.
Let's not get too caught up in the details.
Yeah, you know what? I probably will.
Want people to go see the movie.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
But the point is, he does talk his best friend into actually dating his mother.
That is correct.
He will underwrite that, and he will lend the money.
But it's not dating. It's not dating. He's supposed to be a healer. He's supposed to go there and heal.
Oh.
Healer.
All right, whatever you want to call it.
Right, but he's not going there to date.
Right.
He's going
there to heal. I understand, right. Marty has to, you know, he has to package this request in such a way that his friend will also feel okay about it.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And that is a way that I would imagine he would digest it. Yeah, so. And then all means of all craziness and comedy ensue.
That's correct. Yes. Things just go off the rails.
Yeah. And you've got a very, very attractive cast of young actors. And and as mom, you have Roseanne Arquette. So I want to talk about that. Now, I remember back in the beginning, because I should say by way of disclaimer, I am the executive producer on the film.
What? Executive producer.
What happened?
Did I get demoted? Associate producer, my friend.
Who reads that fine print? Anyway, where I was trying to figure it, we were kind of batting around possible names for the mother, because that's so essential.
Right.
And I was thinking at the time that when you mentioned a Jewish woman of around this age who could be the mother, who would be still very believably attractive to somebody, a young man.
Yeah.
I was thinking you want somebody like Bebe Neuwirth, who people may remember on Frasier, Cheers, of course, rather, as Lilith.
That's correct.
She was great, and she's done tons of movies in theater. And I just thought, this is who you want.
Mm-hmm.
But you were like hung up on Roseanne Arquette, and I was doubtful. I thought, when I think Jewish New York women, I don't think Roseanne Arquette.
I wasn't really looking for a Jewish woman particularly. I was looking for someone who was able to channel her terror, her heart, to just really someone who can easily
the pain and the anxiety on her
pain and anxiity
agitation
and someone who's very vocal
and vulnerable
and sensitive and vulnerable,
right?
And to me, and the woman, I also want her to be in her mid-50s, and I've always loved Roseanne Arquette's work from the late 80s and the early 90s. And I can't recall too much of her work in the intervening periods, and I thought, where the hell is, you know, she deserves a film, and this would be the perfect role for her, and I just couldn't get out of my head, and I thought about it. I mean, I thought of tons of other actresses, you know, who have a much higher profile these days, but she was a person that I really wanted. And
you son of a bitch,
yeah,
you got her,
and I got her. That was amazing.
How did that happen?
You know how it happened. I got a casting director. I told her, you know, can you, you know, get the script to Roseanne Arquette? She said, yes, she could. She did. Rosanna read it, and she responded to the material and said she was in. It was pretty simple.
Wow. How'd you find a casting director? I don't know if it was even. I remember trying to, I was helping with a little bit here and there with different, certainly know I brought the trailer guy to you.
Yeah. Yeah,
and so now we've come all this way, and it's finally having its theatrical premiere.
It is.
In days, weeks. Let's see.
Well it's going to come out on Mother's Day weekend.
Which is very apropos.
Right, which is May 11th. And that's you know, I thought about the, you know, it was kind of kismet. It just kind of happened that we wanted to release it in the early spring or mid-spring or whatever the hell we are. And I said, you know, that's the perfect weekend, because this is the type of film that people should see with their moms. People have time on Mother's Day to, they take their moms out and they have dinner or lunch, and then they have like all this time to spend with them. I said, this is the perfect film to spark a conversation and to really open up issues that have not been discussed. This is like the perfect way to do that.
Yeah, because I made the mistake of taking my mother to see Mother. The Darren Aronofsky film, and that I just regret almost
Yeah.
Besides that, she was not really able to understand what was going on.
Well, this is much more lighthearted.
This is really much more
However, it does, it's a good jumping off point to have discussions about the codependency.
Yeah. Well, or just dependency from the parent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in this movie, I don't think Marty is dependent on his mother. I mean, by the end, there's a reconciliation of sorts. Mm-hmm. We're not going to tell much more than that
because
you know, the fact that Marty dies in a terrible, terrible helicopter accident is that's a spoiler.
Well, let's not reveal too much here.
No, we won't do that. There is no helicopter. I just made that up.
A truck. He's crossing the street.
He's crossing the street, texting with his mother, and he gets run over.
Bam.
Yeah. It's quick and painless.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate it. We were talking also early on about COD.
COD. Cash on delivery.
That's the old-fashioned. You know, children of divorce.
Oh, children parents. Of divorce. Okay, yes. Oh, yeah. So that's what really kind of sparked the inspiration for me. Is I don't think there's a lot of films out there that actually deal with the subject of children of divorce in the context that... that I know and a lot of other people know. So that's really why I did this film, why I made this film.
So is that something you can relate to?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I can.
Uh-huh.
My mom got divorced when I was 6 or 7. And, you know, she's been in and out of relationships, but nothing really that's lasted. And, these moms out there, they need people to champion them. And so that's why I made this film.
Yeah, I think you do naturally, a parent, being a divorced parent myself, I think we do, at certain points when you're lonely, you do lean on your children for a lot of emotional
support.
To fulfill, right, and to fill that
void.
Void, exactly. So even though I have a young son and it was not like, you know, I'm calling him over my printer, but you know, I understand, like, you know, where you kind of like look for the companionship.
Mm-hmm.
It's a natural thing. It's just because it's a comedy, you're able to kind of take that and run away with it.
Right. And okay. So yeah. And so the problem is sometimes it could be too much when you have a lot going on in your own life, and you only have a certain amount of time in the day, certain amount of brain power to put into things. And so this poor guy, Marty, he's overwhelmed by everything he's got going on. And he's exploding inside.
The name of the film is called Born Guilty, and it's directed by Max. No, I'm kidding. Max Heller. Do you remember how we met?
We met at a Q&A, I believe.
That's not right.
Oh, it's not right? Oh, shit. Okay.
No, but it's interesting because I thought that too. And then I remembered that I actually met you before that. And
that?
What it was is that the film we're referring to, the Q&A, the same film, was
Summer of Blood,
owner's film, you know. And he was doing a talk at the Apple Store.
Yes, he did.
This was even before that Q&A, right before Tribeca. I think it was the same week as that Q&A.
Right.
And we're standing in front of the store, and you were walking your dog Boris, and we were all introduced, and then we did the Q&A shortly after.
That's right.
Right after that.
Yes.
Because I don't know if they still do it, but Tribeca was doing the whole. They would have a lot of their directors would do these Apple talks.
Yeah, I think after that one with owner, they decided to reevaluate.
After the one with owner, in fact, they rethought about doing Q&As at all, just even at the screenings after. Because as we both recall, owner was feeling no pain that night.
No, it wasn't.
Now I had had a long history with owner already, but even by then, Summer of Blood. Because of course, I was in one of his movies. I knew him even before that for a couple of years. As soon as he moved to New York, I met him that, like, within weeks of his showing up here.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's going on 5 or 6 years. So by the time we did that, I was already used to him and his way. So I wasn't really, I was there as a moderator because I was on the screening committee for Tribeca Film Festival.
Right.
So I asked if I could do that Q&A. And,
thank God you did.
I'm not put off by it, but you know, you were in the unfortunate position of being sober and trying to kind of be mature and you know, to, responsible to the film that you just produced.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, all these people that were sitting in the audience have become ambassadors for the film in a way.
That's true. That is very true. And there's a couple hundred people in that audience. And that Q&A was like a slugfest.
Yeah, he gets very funny, but also confrontational. But yeah. If you understand who, where he's coming from and that he's just a teddy bear.
But it was highly amusing.
Yeah, it was.
And I think the crowd appreciated it. It was part Q&A, part professional wrestling.
Right, it was definitely entertainment.
Yeah.
Infotainment. Mm-hmm. So, anyway. Opens May 11th.
Correct, Mother's Day.
In New York and in Los Angeles. Can we say? Is it opening in Los Angeles? That's a better way
to ask. Yes, it's opening May 11th in New York City, Los Angeles, Seattle, Phoenix.
What?
Miami, Chicago.
How are you going to do all those Q&As on Friday, the first opening Friday night?
Cleveland, Boston, and a few other places.
That's enormous.
We're hitting 10 cities with this.
How? Because, I mean, I know even bigger films that start in just New York and LA.
Yeah, you know, the distributor decided they wanted to have a little wider reach with the film because of the Mother's Day thing. And everyone out there, it really is a great film to take your mom to go see.
Yeah, it is. There's, you know, it's just the right amount of hijinks and
fun
and emotion.
Yeah, no, it's really, the moms appreciate it. So I know that because we played the film at the Sarasota Film Festival down in Florida.
And
and there was an older crowd there of moms and dads. Oh. And they went nuts for the film.
Okay.
They were laughing and they related.
And you know, because they're not walking out.
No, they didn't walk out. And they came up to me. Everyone wanted to hug and talk. And they all said they wanted to take their children, but their children never call. But so
there you go.
There you go. But no, they,
because before we were talking about the we were kind of referring to maybe the kids could relate to the being the children of parents like that or mothers like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't really mention the mothers who could relate to also, you know, that you were portraying parents who feel maybe not so needy, but that feel that they want more out of the relationship with their children, but feel they don't want to push or tax their children either.
Yes.
You know, and push too hard, even though, you know, they're not completely satisfied.
That is right. That is absolutely right. Yeah. So, I mean, this film, it has a little broader appeal. That's why we decided to open in 10 cities. And we're also going to be on video on demand at the same time. So it's going to be available on every single cable.
On the same day?
Yeah. Yeah, we call it day-and-day release.
I know what we call it, but I just thought maybe we should focus on theatricals, especially because you have so many.
Oh, that's true.
Cities that we should probably not focus on, because you want people to go to the theaters.
I absolutely do.
I know what you're going to do. You're going to have me. Which city are you sending me to?
You're going to Cleveland.
I'm going. Well, you know, it's funny because I do actually have family in Chagrin Falls. No, yes, Chagrin Falls.
Okay.
Which is right next door.
That's perfect. Now, I'm going to probably be one night in New York, probably the Friday night in New York, and then the Saturday evening, I'll probably be in Los Angeles.
I think you should ask owner to do the Q&A.
Yeah, of course. We're going to bring back, you know, it'll be round two.
We could do three of us do a Q&A. That's right. We're like going to relive.
Yeah, we relive the highlights.
Only this time you show up loaded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll show up loaded. We'll assault the audience.
Yeah.
That'll be a lot of fun.
Do you have your cast, or any of the cast members going to come? I know that Roseanne may or may not be there. We'll keep our fingers crossed. But
a bunch of cast.
But if you're lucky, you'll get to meet Roseanne. You'll meet Max. I'll be there.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we're going to have Jay DeVore. I'm sure he's going to be around. David Cousins, who plays Rawl, is a fantastic guy. He's also Australian. And
we can forgive that.
And we can. He's a lovely guy. We can get. Yeah, we'll see. I think we'll see. I mean, it's still a couple of weeks away. But yeah, a lot of people will be on hand for this thing.
Right. All right. So I'll be here in New York. I'll be happy to if you need me.
Yeah.
Just call on me.
You'll be there.
Indeed, I will. Well, how are we doing? Did we get it to everything?
I think so.
So is this will be the beginning of the next phase? You're going to be directing more?
Yes, yes, yes. I have a couple of scripts in development.
Okay.
And yeah.
Now, can I get some points on the back end?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thanks, Max.
Cheers.
Wow, let's get this nut job. You punished me for being bored.
You are out of your mind. What do you see in me?
I see everything. Everything happens for a reason, right?
You ungrateful, rotten, spoiled.
What's so ungrateful? The best thing my son ever gave me was a dishwasher.
Shut up!
Thank you, folks. We'll be coming from Montclair and Maryland in the next couple of episodes. We'll be back in a few days with a brand new episode here of Film Wax Radio. Go over to iTunes, please, and give us a nice review and star rating, if you would. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Keep in touch with all things Film Wax Radio. Enjoy your spring. It finally seems to be here. Take care of yourself and the ones you love. Until next time. This is your host, Adam Shartoff. The name of the show, Film Wax Radio. Take care.